Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up in a few moments, Evangelizo, a website which brings you a daily comment on the Gospel. Spotlight on Pope Benedict XVI's Caritas in Veritate, and also on Blessed Pope John Paul's social encyclicals. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. Ever heard of tellthegospel.org? I hadn't until I met one of the founders of this project, Gregor Pupink. Stay tuned and find out more.
10 years ago, I had the idea of diffusing every morning by email the daily readings, scriptures, the gospel of the day, with a commentary on the life of the saint. It's a very basic idea. 11 years ago, it didn't really exist, and so we started it in French, and very quickly, we have created new languages. The service exists in 10 languages. So the name of the service is Evangelizo, but the English name is dailygospel.org. As a total now, the service exists in English, French, Italian, Spanish, Portuguese, Dutch, German, Polish, Arabic, Aramean. We are working on a Hebrew version, and our project for the next months are Chinese and Russians, Greek, and some African languages.
So you're based in Strasbourg in the north of France. You say that you have people commenting on the daily readings.
Yes.
Who are these people?
We select the commentaries from the Gospel only from the great authors of the Church. So we propose every day a commentary of the Gospel selected from the popes, the fathers of the Church, the doctors of the Church, and the saints. So we try to cover the full history of the Church from the beginning until now. So we have authors also very recent, like Padre Pio or Mother Teresa. Those commentaries are spiritual, and in the meantime, they help to understand the Gospel of the day, and they help to understand it in a Catholic way.
It's good to have famous people. What about the ordinary person? Aren't you excluding them?
We are a lay organization. Even if half of the staff, I would say, are religious people, but we try, you know, to promote and to diffuse the great books from the greatest authors from 2,000 years of history. So this really is this treasury of Catholicism, you know, of all the tradition, all the spiritual tradition of the Church is very often not known. And we try, you know, great authors from Middle Ages or from the 1700s or from today, we try to make them known and we translate them. So we do the selection in French and then we will propose the English version, but very often we will also translate into English.
Something that hasn't been translated.
Never yet. Mm. Same thing in Arabic. So we do first translations of some texts from great authors. So I think it's also useful. Today we have more than 3,000 commentaries selected for each gospel. So, I mean, it's a very big amount of work done, and we translate that into 10 languages. So it's also, interesting from this point of view to diffuse the knowledge of those great authors.
So you never repeat the cycle?
No, we never repeat. We try, we have one monk. He's a real monk, in the deep of his monastery, and every day he works on finding commentaries from his library. And we never stop.
This monk, he has very learned erudite.
Yes, he's a specialist in patristic. And he's American, in fact, indeed, but living in France. And he's a specialist. And with the help of the Holy Spirit, we find every day a very good commentary.
And what's his name, seeing as he's American?
His name is Bradford, Father Bradford.
Father Bradford. And where is his monastery?
In Strasbourg.
In Strasbourg.
But he's originally from East Coast, and he was a French professor, and he moved to France, and now he's a monk in France.
He belongs to an order?
Yes, Fraternité Monastique de Jérusalem. Normally we don't say his name because, he's very humble. So he's one of the keys of the service. We are today 70 people working for free. We always have new projects, and our projects are mainly creating new languages.
It's not your main activity?
No, I'm working for an NGO based in Strasbourg. a Christian NGO. So it's not my main activity. I do that for free.
And our thanks there to Gregor Pupink, one of the founders of tellthegospel.org. And now why not take a look at Pope Benedict XVI's social encyclical, Caritas in Veritate. That's with Professor of Economics at Bologna University, Stefano Zamagni, one of the economists who helped draw up this document. Professor Stefano Zamagni, you teach economics at the University of Bologna. You're the consultor of the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. It's a document which contextualizes the principles already outlined in other social encyclicals by other popes, obviously, such as Populorum Progressio and Centesimus Annus. This third encyclical of Benedict XVI is addressed to Catholics the world over, and it goes by the title of Charity in Truth. That's the translation, the official translation. First of all, shouldn't it be love in truth?
Yes, in a sense, but charity, it's a word coming from Greek. Charis in Greek means grace. Love, on the other hand, it's a word coming from Latin. So ultimately, it doesn't make that much a difference. It's like morality and ethics. Morality, it's a Latin word. Ethics is a Greek word. I think that caritas is, especially in these days, a much, let's say, stronger word than love. Also, because love can be easily misunderstood. As we know, there are three different levels of love. Sentimental love, friendship love, and agape. Now, agape, which is another Greek word, which means the ultimate stage of caritas or love.
Your opinion, then, why did the Pope wish to highlight charity and truth? They've always been at the heart of the social doctrine of the Catholic Church. So what's new?
What's new, as we know, in the history of philosophical thought, there are two traditions. One is connected to Plato. The other one started with Aristotle. To Plato, Plato affirmed the primacy of the truth and of the just over the good. Aristotle said the opposite, the primacy of the good upon justice and truth. Now, the title of this encyclical wants to stress the Aristotelian, Augustinian, and Thomistic tradition, which means that for the Catholics or for the Christians, the search of the truth is fundamental, provided that it is targeted to love, to charity. Otherwise, we run the risk of rationalistic behavior, like those who are looking for the truth with no connection with the good of people.
What strikes you most about this encyclical, first of all?
Two things. The first one, it's a thorough and, I would say, deep analysis of that phenomenon which is called globalization. And in particular, its appendix, which is called financialization of the economy connected to the present crisis. Why it is deep and thorough? Because it does not dedicate, as it is obvious, to technicalities. It's not the target to the Pope to do that, but tries to understand what lies at the bottom of the many disappointing elements of the present globalization phenomenon. The second element of novelty which struck me is the attempt to go behind the present economic organization of our society. The Pope does not simply try to defend mankind from the current, let's say, challenges, etc., but indicates a way out. And the way out is to recuperate the concept of the market economy as a civil endeavor, not necessarily to be confused with the capitalistic. In other words, the market economy is the genus. The capitalistic market economy is a species, which is contingent, historically contingent. And that is, in my opinion, it's of fundamental importance, because most scholars, even within the economic circle, keep on confusing the two. So if you attack capitalists, the consequence is you have to attack the market economy. The Pope says no, not necessarily, because the fact that capitalism today is in a deep crisis does not mean that the market economy, which was created much before capitalism, because the market economy started at least three centuries before the emergence of the capitalistic mode of production. The only point is that you have to operate within the market economy and inside the market economy in such a way as to generate common good. In conclusion, the Pope for the first time makes clear what is the difference between the civil market and the capitalistic market. A civil market is targeted at the common good. A capitalistic market is targeted as the total good. Total good means profit motive, profit maximization. And so that is why the Pope reminds us that today, those who conceive the economic game or the economic endeavor as if the only target where the profit maximization are obsolete, culturally obsolete, and out of this obsolescence, the major disasters which we are observing follow.
Can we break down the encyclical very briefly in the different chapters? In the first chapter, the Pope speaks about Paul VI's encyclical Populorum Progressio. Why do you think he does that, given our model of development today is a far cry from the 1960s? As you said, it's a time of globalization recent financial...
That is something which many people will be surprised of, because in the last, let's say, 10, 15 years, many people in different parts of the world were betting on the fact that the Pope would, in a sense, not contradict, would have discontinued the tradition introduced by Paul VI. The opposite is true. Benedict XVI says, I am on that line of thought and I want to update it, complete, etc. Why is that so? Because development is a word which pertains to the social doctrine of the Church. That is what most people perhaps do not understand. The concept of development started in the 12th century, time when Europe is the time which was is called by the historian the renovation of Europe, 12th century, when the commercial society started. Before, the concept of development did not exist. So that is why in these days, when there are people in different parts of the world talking about the so-called décroissance in French, namely the theory of reducing or even making growth and at a negative rate, is opposed by the Pope. Because development by itself, it's a good word. Development means freeing the human beings from the shackles of misery, of a bad health condition, etc. So by itself, development, it's one of the major contributions of the social doctrine of the Church already from the 12th century on. So the first chapter of the encyclical says the tradition of my predecessors, John Paul II, and also in particular Paul VI, I feel myself following that tradition.
In the face of the present critical scenario of social development, which often offers interconnected negative elements such as financial activities that are mainly speculative, a lack of policies regarding migration, exploitation of natural resources, what vision does Benedict XVI suggest for the future? Does he speak more of respecting rules and regulations already in place or finding new ways to address this present critical scenario?
I would say the second, because the Pope says the problems of a globalized economic world cannot be solved only at the national level. We need a global governance. But, that is important, the global governance should be subsidiary and polyarchic. Polyarchic means a plurality of the centers of decision power, etc. Subsidiarity is the concept which was introduced many, many centuries ago by the social doctrine of the Church, which about which everybody now is aware, not to mention the fact that the European Constitution or the European Treaty explicitly talk about the principle of subsidiarity. To be concrete, what does it mean that? It means that, for instance, referring to the migratory issue, we need a world organization of migration. In other words, we have created, not a long time ago, the World Trade Organization, which is okay, it is important. Why not creating a World Migration Organization or World Organization for Migration? In other words, the Pope says, is it the case that goods, commodities, are more important than human beings? Because human beings today, they move freely from one continent to the other, from the country. Unless we create an international agency endowed with the proper, let's say, power and the proper resources, there will be no way. Now, we are observing that nowadays each country tries to solve the migratory problem by itself. That is an illusion, and it's provoking major dangers, more dangers than benefits itself. The other is the World Organization for Environment. How can we possibly keep on talking about maintaining the environment, anti-pollution, unless we create an agency which is capable of enforcing the treaty which have been freely signed by the different countries?
In the third chapter, Benedict XVI also points to the role of the state. He talks of a civilization of economy. What does he mean by that in the context of the globalized economy?
Within economic thought, there are two major paradigms. One is the political economy paradigm associated to the Anglo-Saxon world. Adam Smith is the guru, the most important figure of the political economy paradigm. The other paradigm is called the civil economy paradigm, and that is much older. And the civil economy paradigm started at the time of the humanism and Renaissance, and had many developed throughout Europe, even in countries different from Tuscany or Italy, where it was born, etc. What is the difference? The difference is that the political economy paradigm, Adam Smith's argument, is based on two basic principles, exchange of equivalents and redistribution. The civil economy adds to those two a third principle, which is the principle of reciprocity. Now, I keep on telling my students, enter a library, whatever. Take any book whatsoever in economics. Look at the index at the end of the book. If you are able to find the word, the lexicon, reciprocity, you win the bet with me. I am always the winner. The point is that the word and the concept, and not to mention the practice of reciprocity, has been literally expelled from the economic jargon. Now, what the Pope says is we have to go back to basics. In other words, to recuperate the principle of reciprocity inside economics, not outside. And in fact, who are talking today about reciprocity? Sociologists, anthropologists, political scientists. The Pope says you economists, both scholars and policymakers, you should find ways to implement, translating into practice, the principle of reciprocity.
You were listening there to Stefano Zamagni, Professor of Economics at Bologna University, one of the economists who helped draw up Caritas in Veritate. Finally, I'd like to join a Dominican Professor of Catholic Social Teaching at the Pontifical University of St. Thomas here in Rome, Alejandro Crosthwaite, who answers some of my questions on Blessed Pope John Paul II's social encyclicals. Centesimus Annus, as we know, was an encyclical, a social encyclical, signed by the now blessed John Paul II on May the 1st, 1991. But, as we know too, this wasn't the only social encyclical he wrote.
I'd like to begin then in chronological order with the encyclical Laborum Exercens on human work. The date is 1981. And you get the feeling that this particular encyclical reflects the Pope John Paul II's personal and very Polish experience. The whole question of communism and the situation of workers and, of course, the word solidarity is very much in the picture. Is that correct?
I think he tries to give an answer within the socialist world or within the communist world, to be in dialogue with it. And so he looks at the question of work, which has always been one of the main questions of Marxism. And he gives a new development precisely to Laborum Exercens. And the big transformation or the big difference, I would say, is his definitions, for example, of capital and labor. Traditionally, they've always been understood capital to symbolize all those who own the means of production and all those who were the entrepreneurs, industrialists, and so on. And then labor was the proletariat, the workers, and the conflict that existed between the two groups and so on. John Paul II gives a whole new definition. So he begins, first of all, by talking about the subjective and the objective dimension of work. And by objective, he basically means that which is produced, that which we produce through our labor. But he really focuses on the subjective element of work. And that is, again, going back to the question of human dignity, and that every human being is capable of transforming his society because of intelligence and so on. So he begins to say every single person is a worker, because no matter what we do, we are producing something. We are changing the world through our own labor. So industrialists in their field, the worker at the mill and so on, we're all workers now. We are all part of labor. We're all part of the working class. And so there's no conflict. There shouldn't be any conflict because we're all in the same boat, you could say, working. Capital is the production, the actual product that we're making. So that's a whole different thing. And so therefore, capital must be under labor. So there's no longer that contention that was spoken about between capital and labor. But we're all workers now. We are called to work in solidarity. So the principle of solidarity, again, becomes canonized and also defined. And we are to work together, and we're all working together. And that's the call. And so not to turn the worker into an object, into a piece of the working machinery. So that's his big contribution, I think, his contribution of definitions of what is capital and what is labor, and the whole question that all of us are workers.
That's in Laborem Exercens.
That's Laborem Exercens, so that's what his focus is on there. Yeah.
So the next one was Solitude.
Ture Socialis, and this is basically just a couple of years before the collapse of the communism and so on, but it's already there. And basically in Solicitur Rei Socialis becomes a very interesting encyclical because he takes on the principles of Populorum Progressio. So he begins to talk about the question of development and the question of how the world has developed in the past two decades, that development needs to lead humanity to the fullness of being, to, again, the principle of human dignity.
Pope John Paul's next encyclical is Solicitudo Rei Socialis on Human Concern. The date is 1987 this time. And if I remember correctly, this particular document attracted plenty of criticism within the Catholic Church because it was viewed as linked to liberation theology. Am I wrong?
Solicitudo Socialis was criticized by some sectors of the Church and as well as the world, because for a lot of them tended to see this encyclical as very socialist, actually. He takes a lot of the principles out of liberation theology and talks about liberation from structures, that there's such a thing as unjust structures, financially, socially, and so on, that somehow work against the development of people, somehow do not allow them to have the human dignity. So he begins to incorporate a lot of those elements, which becomes very contentious. So in many, many, many circles, especially in the United States, for example, we don't talk that much about Solicitudo Rei Socialis. So that's one of those tense moments, I would say. And yet, I think it's a wonderful encyclical because it talks about that is not just a moral issue personally, but is a question of structures, that they actually we need to start changing how our society is structured, how our finances are structured, how our economy is structured, because some of those structures are perpetuating a lot of the problems we have, a lot of the social issues we are having, and that somehow are working against the development of nations. So I think that's one of the main contributions of Solicitudo Rei Socialis.
That's when he used to get angry, that time, kind of time. He used to get angry.
Yes, quite a bit also. Because at the same time, as he's talking about the issues of justice and so on, he's also very concerned that the clergy, per se, will start doing this. He begins to call upon the laity. So he goes back to Vatican II and the whole question of apostolicum actuosism. That is a question that it is the laity's mission to transform the world. It's not that of the clerics or the hierarchy. So the mission of the hierarchy is that of teaching and reminding society, being a prophetic voice. And so he does that in this encyclical. So a lot of the anger that sometimes comes in John Paul II is because he's seeing people doing things that shouldn't be part of their mission. And he addresses that a little bit in Solicitor Socialis, but also in other speeches that he gives through this period.
Then, after the collapse of communism in Eastern Europe, he writes Centesimus Annus to mark 100 years since Rerum Novarum.
Correct. And so this becomes the culmination, we could say, of all the social encyclicals, which Centesimus Annus of John Paul II, the big event again, the world is in a new world order. And that is the collapse of communism and, in one sense, we could say the end of the Cold War as we knew it. So it's a new world order where we have now one power in the world. And so that transforms the dynamics of the world, of the finances and economy. And so in one sense, Centesimus Annus is a victory call to market economy. So he supports market economy, and he says that is the way for progress, that is the way for development. So it's very much embraced Solicitore Socialis by the United States and other countries and the capitalist bloc. But also he begins to warn that we shouldn't glorify capitalism because there's a lot of problems, and we need to be mindful of the poor, and we need to be mindful of the workers and so on. So market economy is wonderful, but it has to be under law. And law that looks at human dignity, that looks at the rights of peoples and rights of nations. So it has to be put within this context of human dignity. And of course, there are several encyclicals being written at the same time about life, for example, Evangelium Vitae, and he talks about Fides et Ratio and so on, that basically are trying to set those parameters within this new world order. So as he embraces the market economy, at the same time, he says, but we have to be aware that there are problems and that basically we're called to solidarity, we're called to subsidiarity. So basically he makes a summary of all those principles that have been accumulating in Catholic social teaching to our time. And that's what he does in Centesimus Annus.
He picks up on the third way, does he?
He doesn't pick up on a third way, actually. Like I said, only Quadragesimus Annus speaks in those terms. The church begins to say, we give the principles that need to be incorporated into the different programs and so on. Also calls us again, he changes a little bit the method of Paul VI, going from the see, judge, and act method to more of here are the principles and how are they applied universally. So he tries to go back to universals again and back, and this is especially reflected later on Fides et Ratio, that there are principles that apply everywhere in the world. So it's a reminder again to the world that there are certain principles. And we could say from social justice would be the principle of subsidiarity, the principle of common good, the principle of solidarity that he begins to call a virtue. This is now a virtue, part of the moral virtues, to have solidarity. So it's the permanent disposition of being not only in pathos or in solidarity with suffering, but also that we begin to work to end that suffering, to improve life, to really be in solidarity, transforming society.
You were listening there to Dominican Alejandro Crosthwaite, Professor of Catholic Social Teaching at the Pontifical University of St. Thomas here in Rome. And that brings me up to time. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks so much for listening. Meanwhile, should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now. You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.